from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Imagine if once you clocked out of work, your next job was trying to find a place to shower and sleep. That's the case for people who are working and homeless. And according to San Francisco's 2017 homeless count and survey, about 13% of San Francisco's nearly 7,500 homeless people have part or full-time work. As part of KQED's week-long coverage of homelessness in the Bay Area, we talk with homeless people who are employed and trying to find stable housing. And that's all coming up after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. For most of us, once we clock out at work, we get to head home to beds and families. But imagine if once you left the office, you had to find a place to shower and sleep. And that's the case for some people right here in the Bay Area who are homeless and also working. According to San Francisco's 2017 homeless count and survey, about 18% of California's nearly 7,500 homeless people have part or full-time work. And as part of KQED's week-long coverage of homelessness in the Bay Area, this hour, we're going to talk with homeless individuals who are employed and trying to find stable housing. If you've experienced homelessness, please share your insights and experiences with us. You can write to us at forum@kqed.org. Let me tell you who's going to be joining us initially. We're going to have a number of people talking in the course of this hour. But I want to welcome first Rochelle Pierre, who has been homeless for 2 years now and works two part-time jobs as a caterer and an Uber driver. She has a 4-year-old son. She also has a master's in social work. And Rochelle Pierre, good to have you with us on Forum. Welcome.
Thank you.
You know, some people think, boy, an MSW, you're kind of living it. That is, experiencing things that you studied about in college. It was just very difficult for you to find work related to your graduate degree?
Well, actually, I did find work to, that was related to my graduate degree, but my professors would always tell me, you know, you're going to have to get a real job to support your social work habit because, you know, unfortunately, we rely on donations and public funds for a lot of the programs. And when there's no grant or you lose a grant, you know, layoff is a big reality in our field.
So you've struggled through that, I understand, and particularly with the cost of living and its son, it must be very challenging. You've actually lived in a car, and now you're in a transitional house?
Yes, I've lived in my car for a couple of months with my son, and we're currently in a temporary shelter.
And that temporary shelter, talk about it, because when you have a kid in a temporary shelter, and we're going to talk to some more parents who have experiences like yours, there's always that concern about those who are in the shelter, safety issues, security issues, and so forth, yeah?
There's definitely a lot of feelings of being unsafe because you have sometimes men and women living there. A lot of people sometimes maybe have mental health issues or they may be using drugs or, you know, just unsanitary conditions because, of course, these shelters also live on donations. And so, you know, your child is sick. Often my son has been in emergency way more than he was before we became homeless with kind of sicknesses that, you know, just are basically related to being clean and, you know, getting hives and throwing up because the food, you know, I don't know, just different things. He's just really been sick a lot, high fevers. Just being in that environment where people who don't have medical coverage aren't going to the doctor on a regular basis, and you're in there with that. So,
I think you've pretty much communicated to your son though that home is where mommy is. I mean, that's kind of essentially what you've made him feel and made him understand.
Yeah, that's what I had to tell him because, you know, every night, like you said, when you opened the show, you go, you get off work, you get out of school, that's your stableness, and then you go into being unstable. You don't know where you're going to sleep at night. A lot of these shelters, you can only be in for a couple of months, and then you have to be out, and when you're out, there's no provision for where you're going to go, and most of us, you know, sleep in our car, sleep at a Starbucks, at an emergency room in the hospital, you know, just someplace where you know there's a bathroom for your child to be able to use it, and, you know, that people won't be looking at you funny, you know, when your child has to use the restroom, you know, and you want to clean up and go to school the next morning. And so I told him, yeah, when we're together, we're at home, wherever that may be.
How do you keep consistency with school, though, when you're constantly having to move and, you know, be as mobile as you are?
For me, it is very, very difficult because, and there are days that I do have to miss because, you know, if we're far away because it's really cold, I can't stay in San Francisco, and we stay somewhere that's a little bit warmer at night, you know, I might not be able to make it to his school that next day, you know, or he'll be very, very late. I try hard to do time management, but it's really hard when your clothes are in this space and you're over here and you can't get to your clean clothes. So it's really difficult. I can say I don't make it 100% of the time.
It's also the stigma of being homeless. I mean, when you're working, do people generally, are they apprised of you being in this homeless situation that you're in?
Well, for me, I'm really lucky. My supervisor found out about my situation and, you know, was willing to pitch in and help out. But I know for a lot of people, you know, that's not the case. And, you know, at my job, at least, there's a couple of nice bathrooms. I did let her know that sometimes my son and I may have to come in and use the restroom before we go to school. And she was nice enough to allow that to happen and said, you know, go ahead and use the facilities. There's other people in your same situation. You know, we work downtown San Francisco, so you're amongst the richest people and the poorest people all at the same time. And so I'm just lucky. But, I mean, you go to places like even McDonald's and, you know, you watch how people are treated. I'm not perceived as homeless because I do try to keep my appearances up and my son's appearance.
What do you do, though, about...
that I have...
I'm sorry, go ahead. You cut out there for a minute. I'm sorry.
Oh, I cut out for a second?
Yeah,
sorry.
Go ahead.
I see how they are really treated. And, you know, I was in line with this one man who, you know, obviously wasn't able to take a shower. And I told him, I said, you know, you're paying your money just like everyone else. You deserve to eat. You know, hold your head up high because nobody knows when this situation can happen to them. Everyone thinks it won't happen to me. Master's degree, you know, I thought this one, I had a savings. I had all of those things that I thought that I needed to have. But, you know, due to the child care costs and the rising rent, I just couldn't make ends meet, you know, as a single parent.
So what could be done, if I can ask you just directly, to help people like you or people in your situation, whether it's
definitely subsidized child care for people who are working? You know, I have friends who are two-parent households who can barely pay for their child care alone, just the child care. You know, when you have a small child, it can be anywhere from $1,200 to $2,000 a month, depending on the facility that you have your child at. And you want to feel safe while you're at work that your child is okay. And, I mean, I have friends that, you know, they're affluent, but they're staying in domestic violence situations only just to take care of the child. I mean, there's statistics that say three women and child who have in poverty, lives in poverty. And so
I think we
with an abuser.
I'm sorry. Well, you keep cutting out on me, Rochelle, I'm sorry to say, but let me extend my gratitude for your being with us and telling your story here this morning. And again, Rochelle Pierre has been homeless for 2 years, works a couple of part-time jobs as a caterer and a Uber driver, and has a four-year-old son. And actually, Dominic Griffin's here with us in studio. He also has child care challenges, shall we say. Been 3 months homeless and seeking employment now.
Definitely been trying to seek some good employment, but some stable child care up under me. to go through with everything.
That's been the real challenge. I want to talk to you and find out your story. Let me also introduce Deshaunay Moore, who's here with us in studio. You're 4 years homeless, works now at CivicCorps, and thank you for being here with us this morning.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
Appreciate your being with us. Let me go back to Dominic, though, just again, the difficulty of taking care of your child and actually finding a job, going shelter to shelter and living in your car now, too?
Yeah, at the moment in time, if I don't have enough for a hotel or anything like that, we do resort to going to different shelters and things like that. And if,
you got two sons. Yeah.
Yes, I have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old that I take care of by myself.
And you're a man who describes yourself as not being on drugs, just between a rock and a hard place, 31-year-old guy with a couple of kids who really wants to work, who has a good work ethic and can't find the work that you need.
Yeah, exactly. I'm definitely not on drugs, not an alcoholic, substance abuse, or anything of that nature. I'm just a man in between a rock and a hard place trying to get himself up out of it. A certain chain of events just kind of happen, and I just kind of call it life at the moment in time, just a chapter in it.
And that, let's talk about living in a shelter. We heard what Rochelle had to say about that with your children. I mean,
right.
Really, as a good, dedicated, loving dad, it's a constant worry, isn't it?
Yes, it's a constant worry, but it's definitely a sacrifice that you have to make to provide for your children in any circumstances. Even though it's not the best environment to have your kids in or anything like that, though. Like Rochelle was saying, it is some sort of a hazardous environment, considering the fact that a lot of people, when they get down and out, they kind of lose track of who they are. And they seem to have a perception of themselves as not being good enough for so forth and so forth, this, that, and the third, which a lot of people just let life suck them in.
What about you, family? I mean, you know, a lot of people who are homeless who have kids have to rely on family, you know, parents, grandparents.
Right, right.
Yeah. In your situation, you can't?
My situation, my family isn't put together as best as the next. So relying on my family members, they don't understand the word of commitment. Commitment is just something that you do, and it's not just something that you say. It's doing something long after that feeling is gone, long after that happy time when you said that you were going to do it, and you still do it when you wake up the next morning, even though you feel bad. A lot of my family members don't understand that.
Well, let's talk to Deshaunay about this, too. Deshaunay Moore is with us here, been homeless for 4 years. You were, what, 17 years old when you went out on the streets?
Yeah.
What happened with your family? Just had to leave?
No, my mom left me and my big sister in an apartment, and we got into a physical altercation, and I had to leave the house. So just from there on, I just lived pillow to post, from friend house to friend house, from girlfriend house to girlfriend house, hotel here. But
couch surfing, they
yeah,
call
couch
it.
Surfing, that's what they call it.
Yeah,
I wasn't old enough to get a hotel room, so it was hard for me to like live. It'd be times where I have to sleep in parks in my car, and I just didn't know where to go from there, so I figured getting my education was the first step. So I found CivicCorps. Well, CivicCorps found me, and
that's what's up.
They opened my eyes to a lot of things, like just being open minded to new opportunities, so I can make a way out of no way.
The CivicCorps helped you a good deal, yeah.
Yeah.
In what ways? I mean, in fact, I think you said it saved you. Really.
Yeah, it did. It did. Like just from being on the streets, like being homeless, I had all the time in the world to just do whatever. And I called it wasting time, because before I came to CivicCorps, I was wasting a lot of time.
But what did they actually do for you?
They gave me a job, and they gave me my high school. Well, I earned a job, and I earned my high school diploma.
That's what's up, right?
You
there.
Know, they give you a job while you're going to school, so you can support yourself and not have to depend on anyone or anything. Like you go to work, you earn your own money, and you take care of yourself. It might not be the way that you want to take care of yourself, but you got hygiene, you got money to come and eat the next day. They feed you. Like it's a lot of things that they have. Like they took me, my first time ever being out of California was to the Shakespeare Oregon trip. They took us to the Shakespeare play.
Ashland,
Oregon. Yeah, they took us up there and it just changed me. Like I seen new things. Like I could breathe fresh air, I felt like, for the first time. Like I got sick up there because the air was so clean to me. Like I was like I couldn't. The words was, it's priceless to me to know that, you know, people who's not my family, who didn't even know me from a can of paint, would take a chance on me and show me something different just to let me know that it's not all of what you've been raised up seeing. Like, it's more to the world. Just go out there and find it.
But also people showing interest in you and attention to you and caring about you.
Yeah.
All you really want is maybe a stable home and a roof over your head?
Yeah, just having somewhere to go home, go to, and take a shower and collect your thoughts and not have to worry about what happened throughout the day, just knowing that you're safe. It makes all the difference because you got a chance to start over and forget about yesterday and worry about tomorrow.
Right. And like Dominic, you're not a drug user.
No, none of that.
No certified mental illness or anything like that.
No.
I mean, because a great percentage of people who are homeless have those kind of problems.
Schizophrenia. People are not homeless because of just one day, parents kicked them out. It's certain mental illnesses. It's certain situations. It's job loss. It's economy lack. It's a ton of things that can make people homeless.
Do you identify with the homeless?
Yeah, I identify with the homeless. I might not look homeless because I could take a shower in my school. That's why I said they helped me. What school you could go take a shower in other than high school at gym class? Right. My school, they feed you. They give you not money, but vouchers to get haircuts. They take care of you. They want you to make it. They see there is no other organization who is dealing with 18 through 27-year-olds helping them get their high school diplomas and a job, a career, not just a job, a career. We work with East Bay Regional Parks, Alameda Flood Control. We work with so many different organizations to help us set up 401k plans when we leave from Silver Course with our high school diplomas. We are their first choice because we have experience in the work that they're doing. They're training us to get paid $45 an hour, $30 an hour, with the basic job training that we're doing, just coming to school, learning at an experienced level, no experience level. They take you from a caterpillar and turn you into a butterfly.
Well, what's the butterfly? Do you see it ahead? Let me go through this chrysalis.
For me, I want to be an automotive technician. So now I'm going to school. I'm going to college at Alameda for automotive classes. My butterfly is having my own car garage, just a little bit of over 100K a year, just living, just working hard. I don't mind working hard, and that's what I loved about Silver Course. They didn't mind putting me to work so they can pay me for my work.
Well, Dominic's the same way. You both have a work ethic. Dominic, what would you like to be doing as far as work goes?
As far as work, I'm more of a construction guy. A lot with my hands and things like that. The last job I just had was roofing, global construction. Definitely do a little bit of that, though, so. Definitely a little bit of my field.
You want to work hard for your kids?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Working hard every day is something that's installed in me, and I try to install that in my kids as well. Going through this situation, they have to understand this isn't the best situation, but, dad's going to get us out of this. And they understand that to the fullest extent. So, it's something that they're going to look back on when they get older and appreciate it.
But you both are willing to work and both able-bodied and not, fortunately, have the good fortune of not being afflicted with mental illness or drug addiction and so forth.
Yeah.
So you'd like to be out there. And yet, what about the reality of working a full-time job and still not being able to afford the cost of housing?
You want to go first?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's definitely difficult, especially being a single parent from my perspective. You know what I mean? It's definitely a real difficult to do that, especially when you're working a full-time job. And some places think that you make too much money to get assistance for child care, which that was my case. So I kind of just fell up under. I had a choice of going to work or watching my kids at the moment in time because I didn't have a stable environment under me to help me watch my kids. So therefore, the choice was hard, but at the same time, it was the right choice at the time because my kids couldn't stay home by themselves. So as me being their father and their sole provider, I had to do what was necessary, even though I seen the adversity I was going to have to overcome.
Yeah, let me go back to Rochelle Pierre, who's still online with us. And Rochelle, I mean, you had some of these challenges. It was kind of an irony. You were, and again, this is something you learned getting a master's in social work. You would be more entitled to get help if you were in a different situation than you were in.
And yes, that's really true. When I was working, I was making $20 an hour, which is really nothing in the Bay Area. And so I didn't qualify for any of the subsidies. I didn't qualify for any child care subsidies, but my rent was one half of my income and my child care was the other half of my income. So there was no money for food, transportation, travel, anything, all those things that you need to be able to get to work every day. And so because I had no support, I ended up losing my job. And then once I became homeless, that's when they offered me the services where what I was saying from the beginning, if you had like helped me from the beginning when I was working, which working poor, then I would have never been in this situation in the beginning, you know.
Well, at least you're going to get tips now from Uber, but there's still not enough to live on, really, is it?
Well, now they're going to give us tips eventually, soon. It's coming.
Yeah, but it's still, again, we get back to this question of cost here in the Bay Area, especially in San Francisco. Deshaun, anymore? Yeah. Want to say something about that? I mean, just the unaffordability?
Yeah, just no rent control right now. It's like every time our minimum wage go up, our rent go up. Like, it's no possible. I don't know how to explain it, but there's no possible way that we could work for 40 hours and then not be able to afford rent. I have to make three times the rent. That's why people normally pick up two and three extra jobs.
And you're in a better situation not having kids.
Yeah, just I mean, by myself, I still have to make three times the rent. And then after you make the three times the rent, you have to worry about lights. Then you have to worry about food. Then you have to worry about getting to work to actually make the money for the rent in the first place. Yeah. Like, it's so many different oppressions hitting you at one time. How do you keep going? How do you map out which way to go? Like, how do you make sure you make $3,500 a month when your job only offers you 26 with the 80 hours a week? Well, with the 80 hours every two weeks.
It does not compute.
It does not compute.
And you are also someone who describes yourself as a survivor.
Yeah. I just, like, I don't know. 17-year-olds back then at my age, they needed both parents. They needed a parent. They needed a support system. When I got kicked out of my sister's house, I had no one, no thing, no help, no one to call. I had to figure it out. I had to survive on my own with nothing, no money, no phone, no, like, it's certain skills that you pick up when you have to live a certain type of way. When you are faced with the complications that you are faced with when you're homeless, it's either make it happen or it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Rochelle, you want to add something here? Go ahead.
Yes, you definitely learn survival skills, how to eat on a dollar. You know, how do I go to the store and feed my son and myself when I actually have a dollar? Okay, we just have to buy two packs of top ramen that are 50 cents each and go beg someone to let us use the microwave so that we can both have dinner that night. I mean, literally, you learn these skills that make you very resilient. And when you do finally get back on your feet, you know, you'll be able to live. But want to go back to where you were talking about the rent. San Francisco is where I work, and the rent for a studio in the Tenderloin is $1,900 a month. Right. And that's in the studio where you're walking out and someone's shooting drugs right in front of your face, in your child's face. That's how much people are paying. And, like, you know, yes, you have to make three times that income in order to live in that type of environment. You know, that's the craziness about the rent in the Bay Area.
Yeah, you've said it very well. And, Rochelle, I thank you for being with us. Appreciate your telling your story here on Forum this morning, and good luck to you.
Thank you guys so much. Good luck to all of you.
You have a blessed one, Rochelle.
Rochelle Pierre, again, 2 years homeless, works two part-time jobs as a caterer in an Uber and has a four-year-old son and a master's in social work. You may want to add your own thoughts or your own stories to this discussion. We welcome you to the program. You can call us and join us at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. If you have comments or questions, join us that way or go to our website or our Facebook page or email us, forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. As part of our all-week coverage on homelessness here in San Francisco and really the Bay Area, we're talking to a number of people who are homeless but who also hold down jobs or are employed or work, or in the case of Dominic Griffin, who's here with us seeking employment at this point, but certainly willing to work. And we have Deshaunay Moore, who is now with Civic Corps, and we spoke with Rochelle Pierre, who has a couple of jobs as a caterer and an Uber driver. We're going to get a number of other people on the line with us in the course of this hour, including you, and you can join us by calling our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also post comments on our website or our Facebook page, or email us, forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. And I just want to ask either Dominic or Deschone, I was saying to them when we were off the air, Deschone, I'm sorry, I keep butchering your name. Deschone. You both have a good attitude. I mean, you both have, you're both kind of really upbeat and positive. And, you know, there are people who, I mean, without necessarily being mentally ill or drug addictions, can be really down about your situations. What keeps you up? I mean, your kids have a lot to do with it.
Oh, yeah. Most and foremost, my kids, they definitely look up to me as a sole provider. So, therefore, I got to keep my grind going every single day. There's not a day that goes by that I can't just get up and lay down and do nothingness. It's always a sense of...
No downtime.
It's always a sense of pride that kind of stuck with me throughout the years and things like that. And keep myself going, definitely.
Deschone?
I just believe... whatever you put in the world is what you're going to receive. So, like, I always try to put positiveness into the world so I can get positiveness back. Like, I don't want to be down on myself because I know if just bad times are going to be happening. I want to be positive about my situation. Like, it's a bad situation, but I want to look at the good things about it. Like, just how I'm punctual, like, how it's teaching me how to survive in certain situations, how to save and be on a budget, and how it's just teaching me a lot of things, and I really look at the good things about it than the bad things about it.
Right. Well, you get these necessary tools, you feel more confident, you feel more able, really, don't
you? Yeah, you definitely feel more able, definitely feel like you need to do something at every point in time, not just any point, or not just half off. You definitely have to keep yourself going mentally wise, because it can be hard out there. Especially experiencing certain things and experiencing with your children, your kids, and have them seeing things that not the average kid would see on a daily basis, and not the thing that a kid would go through.
Right?
You don't want your kids to see that. You don't want your kids to go through anything that you have went through as a child at all. Me and myself, I have went through certain trials and tribulations as a child, which definitely I don't like my kids going through as well, being without a home and going living from hotel to hotel or shelter to shelter and things like that. I definitely didn't want that for my kids or anything of the nature. But as time went by and as God willingly put me in this position, he knows that I know I'm not going to fold at any point in time. So he just put you through this to make you the better person of who you are and who you're supposed to be throughout life.
Well, we're getting some comments from listeners. Let me read some of these. Lurleen writes, I work with the homeless every day. It isn't easy for them to keep their jobs, even if they do excellent work. Their employers often worry about what they perceive as bad habits or a negative influence they may have on others. They often don't have clothes for every day of the week and can't always come to work clean and polished. Here's Tiffany, who writes, I teach at SFUSD and am seeing more and more families who are homeless or moving from place to place. Once they are unstable, they are not able to get the deposit or references necessary to secure housing or employment. One student's family has been on the waiting list for public housing for 4 years, and another student now commutes from Richmond. And here's Brian, who writes, we need subsidized child care. I can reaffirm that child care expenses are way out of hand in relation to the cost of living. I have no idea how single parents make this work. Children are a benefit to our society and not a burden. Subsidized child care needs to happen now. And you can add your own thoughts, your own comments. In fact, again, we welcome them a number of ways that you can join the program, either going to our Facebook page or our website and posting comments, or for that matter, giving us a call at our toll-free number. In fact, we're going to go to some callers here. Let me bring in Kate as our first caller. Kate, you're up on the air. Good morning.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I feel that I'm a flight attendant with an airline that's based in Syria. It's very, very difficult for people to survive on what we get paid and what the rents are. But just want to say, I think there should be some kind of a tax added when properties are sold, you know, because of tech. People are driving up the prices, making people homeless, and that affects all of us when people end up out on the street because they can't afford their rent anymore.
Well, a housing tax is one of those things that's been put forward. I mean, there are lots of policy well, things that have been advocated through the years, particularly in San Francisco, as I'm sure listeners are well aware from listening to this program and hearing different things. We're not talking so much about the policy side of things, though, this hour, although we've gotten into that some extent in terms of child care subsidies. We're talking more about just the day-to-day struggle and what it means to actually have a job, hold down a job, want to work, and face the reality of this terrible housing crisis in terms of cost. Let me bring another caller on here, and that's Sean from San Mateo. Sean, you're on.
Hi there. Michael, thank you for having me on today. I'm a 32-year-old man. I started my own business about a year and a half ago when I lost my job. But, of course, starting your own business is expensive. And, I was forced to move out of my apartment and move into my van. I wanted to address some of the hidden costs of homelessness. I had an apartment full of stuff that I didn't want to get rid of, and so I had to get a storage unit. And so that's, almost $400 a month. And eating out every single day because there's no way of keeping your food cold or heating it up. And so, having to go out to restaurants or get fast food or whatever is very expensive. And
also not necessarily the healthiest way to eat, right?
Absolutely. I try to go and get salads and things like that from Trader Joe's and Safeway, but it's much more expensive than cooking at home. And then having a gym membership that I need to keep up so I can shower and use the restroom and all that stuff. It costs me almost as much.
We got a terrible line here. I'm sorry to say you keep breaking up, but it mentions gym membership. There are ways that you find YMCA, all those kinds of things where you just, if you can afford to join a gym or things along those lines, just a place to go for a shower, right?
Definitely issue with that, considering the fact of kids involved and things like that. Mm-hmm. Definitely hard to produce a shower when needed for your children.
I've got Kenyatta on the line here, who has been homeless for 10 years and does on-call work, and wanted to hear his story to add to the mix here as well. And Kenyatta, thank you for joining us on Forum. Welcome to the program.
Okay, how are you today?
Thank you for asking. What would be my first question? Well, let's go back a little bit to your history. You were in Richmond, Virginia, right, initially?
Right.
And you were sleeping on the streets and maybe in some instances when it got cold, just stealing beer to go to jail to where it was warmer?
Man, it's powerful.
No, that's all you can do in Virginia. I'm getting off the bus. Hold on for 1 second. I never was homeless in Virginia because at the time when I got out of prison, a friend of mine found something similar to a shelter, although Virginia don't have a shelter. And I got a job as a carpenter, and I worked for 3 years because by me being a violent offender, I had to be on parole for 3 years.
Yeah, I know you did some hard time. You did some prison time. Has that made it more difficult to find work with that?
No, not really, because when I came out here in California, after my parole up, I came out here, and I got on I came out here in 07, and I got on GA, and they helped me until I found a job, and once I found a job, I got my own place, and...
Yeah, but now it's very hard for you to find any kind of housing, isn't it? In terms of the cost?
I found a studio on Broadway. Ah. Right here in California.
Very good.
And I stayed there for 3 years until I decided, I thought going back to Georgia, I heard so much about how nice Georgia was for black people and how cheap it was. It is cheaper, but I just didn't like Georgia. Georgia seemed like it's going backwards, and the rest of the world is going forward.
Well, where are you where are you right now? Can you just give us an assessment in terms of?
I'm in San Francisco.
No, I didn't mean. Are you working? Are you working a job?
No, I'm not. I'm gonna start a job next Wednesday. It's a part-time job as a janitor, and I'm hoping I can find a place to live between there and then, because my time at the shelter expires on the 10th of this month, and 10th of July.
Well, you got a due date there. I certainly hope that you find a job and that you find a place, the place that you're in, to be comfortable and to be a place that's most livable for you. Yeah, and I wish you good luck, and I thank you for joining us this morning. We're going to be joined by some other callers in just a moment. Here's a tweet, though, from a listener who says, we need to take better care of each other. The system of constant deprivation and punishment is unconscionable. And here's Marianne, who says, I'm a public school teacher. I've worked since I was 17. I taught for 18 years, but was diagnosed with terminal cancer. I raised two kids as a single parent. I'm living with a friend with no hope of getting my own place to live.
Yeah, you got hope.
She got us all. She got us hope right now.
Yeah, well, how do you keep your hope? How do you stoke that? Both of you have hope.
Go ahead.
Just knowing that nobody's going to do it for me, or, you know, it's not going to fall out of the sky and just be given to me. I got to work hard for it. Hope is, I don't know. Is what you make of it. Like, if you give up hope gonna give up on you. Like,
right.
You can't never give up. Like, you gotta keep your head straight and have tunnel vision and know it's gonna take a lot of hard work. It's gonna be obstacles in front of you. It's gonna be things that's gonna try and knock you down. It's gonna be people who's gonna make you feel some type of way about your situation. You gotta know that your situation is only gonna get better if you put the hard work behind the dream, basically.
He's saying keep hope alive, Dominic. That's what Jesse Jackson said, right?
Oh, yeah, you definitely got to keep it alive, man. What I have learned is the process is way more important than the product. Like, for instance, you can see a Mercedes-Benz all day, but it was a process that that went through to get that Mercedes-Benz to look so beautiful.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't want to go overcome adversity. And when they see that big wall, they just kind of fall down.
You know, I'm talking about there's wisdom that comes out of this life on the streets.
Oh, yeah, definitely do. It definitely do. You got to keep yourself level-headed as best as possible. Yeah. Like I was saying, the process, you got to go through that process to get to where you need to be to make you who you really are. Oh. And a lot of people don't go through the process. They fall down and they never get back up. And they look to the sky and just like how other colleague was just saying, they just kind of wait on it.
Yeah.
You can't wait on it. You got to go out there and grind. Yeah. You got to go out there and get it. You got to go out there day by day. Because just because you want something does not mean the next person doesn't want that.
Just
or the next 100 people don't want that.
Well,
you got to go out and get
it. It's a competitive world. It's a capitalist world.
Yeah. Yes,
we'll bring some more
is.
Callers on here. We've got Greg on next. Greg, join us. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me. First, I just wanted to say I'm really, really impressed with the attitude and the positive outlook that I'm hearing from your guests, these two young people.
Thank you.
If they can maintain that, if you guys can maintain that through the adversity you're dealing with right now, I think you'll go very far in life. I just wanted to say I had a brief period of homelessness when I was a young man. I was about 19. I was working. I moved away from home to work in the ski industry. And, something like you guys said, it doesn't have to be this earth-shattering moment that causes your homelessness. I had met someone. I was in an expensive housing situation. I had met someone who told me that, you can move in with me. It'll save you a lot of money. It'll be great. And so I left my old place, went to move in, and he never really. It was all BS to say, So I left me holding the bag. So I was living in the back of my station wagon in February in Maine. So, we're talking below zero temperatures and stuff like that.
Cool.
Fortunately for me, it didn't turn into something that's chronic. I was able to, work it out in about a month.
Cool.
And I'll tell you what, it taught me a lesson and an appreciation for what I have. So that was kind of just what I wanted to share.
Thank you for your story. I appreciate you hearing from you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We're going to hear from some more listeners. We go to John next. John, thanks for waiting. Join us. You're on the air.
Santa Rosa?
John from Santa Rosa, that's who you are, isn't it?
Hi.
Yeah. Hi.
So, hi, Michael. I really appreciate this topic. It's very dear to me. So, I'm 56 years old. Like, I know there's so many levels of homelessness in our society. There's the urban experience, and then there's the suburbs, and I'm out here in Santa Rosa. I've been homeless since 2008. Primarily in my car since 2012. Right now, after the layoffs of 2008, I slipped into deep alcoholism, made a lot of very poor choices. Mm-hmm. 2012, I started coming out of that, and I built up a self-employed handyman service. And I work. I have the option of working today. I chose to take the day off. But it's just I right now at this point in life I just it's become a new norm. I couldn't imagine paying rent right now. If I had to pay a rent check every month, I would be impoverished. I wouldn't eat. I mean, where would I get the gasoline? Right now, my car's insured. My license is valid. My car is registered. I take a shower every 3 days. You know, and
so this has become your life. This is what you're saying,
this
right?
This has become the new norm, Michael. Yeah. It's just the new norm. I mean, I honestly, 10 years ago, if I would have imagined this, I couldn't have.
Well, this could create a diminished sense of hope. I mean, you wouldn't want, neither of you here in studio would want to think that this is your norm now, would you?
Right.
No,
right.
But our normal ain't normal.
No.
It's just a chapter in life. That's all it is.
Thank you for letting us know your situation. I appreciate hearing from you. And as a listener who asks, and you must hear a lot of this, I think, this is Anna who writes, would it make sense for some of the people who are working and not able to make it here in the Bay Area to consider moving somewhere with a lower cost of living? Would it make sense to provide help for folks to be able to relocate to a job and home in cheaper areas?
Go ahead.
I would say no.
No.
And the reason why I say no is that's just putting an excuse clause in the way.
Yeah.
That's just putting extra barriers in your path. Like, now you see the barrier, you take it down. Period.
Don't run.
There's
from
no
it.
Yeah.
But it would be cheaper to live in a lot of different places.
Yeah, it would be. That where you are is where you are, and you can try to travel and move everywhere else, but it's always going to be bumps in the road. It's always going to be adversity that you're going to have to overcome, and you moving is not going to necessarily change the situation.
Stop the problem.
Right. I always like what Ralph Waldo Emerson said. You take you wherever you go, basically, is what I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said.
Right.
Here's Wes, who says, where do I post jobs for homeless youth or adults? I'm a plumber who has been looking to give an opportunity to someone. I'd be offering a relatively flexible, decent-paying job with plenty of room to grow and eventually make very good wages. Tradespeople are currently in high demand in the Bay Area.
Just find organizations who work with young people who actually have great attendance with showing up to jobs. Like, don't just like
Civil the Corps.
Job. Yeah, like Civil Corps, not just Civil Corps. I don't know really any other organizations who supply young people with jobs and give us the opportunity to, like what he said, opportunity to grow and change.
Well, before the hour is over, we may hear from some listeners who make specific suggestions along those lines. I'm just wondering, speaking of specific suggestions, Dominic, have you looked into Raphael House? Do you know about Raphael House?
Yeah, I've been informed of that just recently, as of yesterday. So I definitely...
They take families in, and they do wonderful work.
Yeah, I definitely heard that yesterday, as well as coming on this talk show. It was very short time span, but I definitely have heard of it. I definitely will give them a contact to see what's going on.
I think it would be worth
with the situation.
Your time and effort. Let me get Wendy on next from Berkeley. Wendy, hi.
Hi. Thank you for the show. And I know two homeless people. I live in the East Bay. Actually, one is down in Fremont, and I'm in Berkeley. So, and another one has been shipped up to Alaska. I ache knowing this closeness to people who are homeless and feeling helpless and wanting to know in multiple avenues what I can do. And as I spread my talk, helping other people, you know, whether it's somehow, you know, shower, food, making it through child care, especially the child care. I'm 70 years old. I'm retired. I worked with kids. I could volunteer helping take care of kids, but I don't know how to go about this.
A lot of people really want to help. I mean, there are really a lot of good, decent people here who want to help, and there are organizations that you can avail yourself of, and maybe we'll try to get some of those on our website so that you can indeed find ways to help those of you who want to. Let me bring more of our callers on. Let me thank the caller and go to our next caller, Danielle, who's calling from Oakland. Danielle, hi.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Thank you. Been better, but thank you for asking. No, I've got a kidney stone. Who cares, well, right? You asked a question. I'm giving too much information. But
I got it. Well, listen, I'm doing wonderful, and you know, I am in a circumstance that folks would look at as a situation. I like to call it home free, as you know, opposed to homeless. The positivity and just owning that piece of it kind of helps get through the days. But, you know, one of the things that I'd like to say, I have a young elementary age daughter and a husband, and, you know, we kind of live out of our truck, and, you know, we have some people who, you know, allow us to do the laundry here and there and take a shower here and there, but we're pretty much in the truck at night and just kind of working and stuff during the day. And, you know, we don't have much, but one of the things that I think helps to get us through this situation, and I think that just kind of helps everyone, is to give in spite of not having much. So, you know, I might have $3 and it might be a Top Ramen dinner night, like, you know, was spoken about earlier. And if I've got 50 cents left over, or if I have enough noodles left over and I see someone else in need, because I do know, you know, there's a huge difference between being home free with a car and home free without one. Right. So just really basic, small stuff that I can do, even though others might look at me as being in a situation myself, mm-hmm. is something that I think, you know, we should all be kind of conscientious of. I was listening to your last caller. It is very hard, especially when you don't have money to give to agents, to help, you know, in a way that you feel you're getting a direct connect. One of the suggestions that I have, and a really good friend of mine used to do this all the time, he taught me this, was, you know, keep a box of granola bars or whatever, some fruit in your car and a case of water. And, you know, when you're getting off the freeway, you might not always have a dollar, but I've never had anyone turn me down when myself or my daughter passes in, you know, a granola bar and a bottle mm-hmm. of water and just smiles at them and tells them, hey, you know, it's going to get better. It already is. So I think positivity has a lot to do with it, and it certainly doesn't pay the bills or give you shelter or any of those things, but it does make it just that much easier, you know, to get through.
Well, it's good of you to call with that advice, and can we put you on hold? Irene, our producer, wants to talk to you. Can you?
Absolutely.
All right, and appreciate hearing from you. Yeah, you know, this needs to be emphasized, because you talk about the shelters and you with your kids, Dominic, and you spend a good deal of time in them, Deshaunay, and you know, you meet up with some difficult, sketchy, bad characters, but you also meet up with some people who are really generous and good-hearted, don't you?
Yeah, you definitely do, and it's crazy how she stated that even though she's not in the best situation, she still gives, and it's real ironic how when people don't have it, they still give, and a lot of people that have it
sometimes
don't
they give more than the people who have it.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
They tend
and
to be there more because they know
backwards.
Yeah, what you're going through. Like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, you just took the words right out of my mouth. Like, people don't, I don't know, just because you're in a bad situation don't mean you can't help somebody out and who's in a worse situation than you right. are. Like, I don't know. That's what I was talking about earlier. You put positivity into the world, you're going to get positivity back. Like, I don't like being negative during no part of the day. Like, it's weird to say that, but I just feel like if I'm positive about
everything.
If
you're awake, you're up.
Yeah,
Well, here's Andrew who writes, the strength that I hear from your guests is inspiring, to say the least. So positive and uplifting, despite their circumstances. Thank you for sharing your stories, as we're all a bit better for it.
Shout out to him.
Shout out to you, though. Straight
bring out another caller, and that's Greg from Redwood City. Greg, go ahead.
Good morning. I just want to say, you know, all of your guests seem to be very positive people, and, you know, we're all talking about, like, giving, and, you know, one of the best things you can give is, you know, your time and your advice. And I would highly recommend looking into relocating. You're trying to live in the most expensive area in the country, and I have friends that work at Google and Facebook, and they're still living paycheck to paycheck. So, you know, it's taking the long shot, and, you know, like, hoping for the best is always great. But being realistic is also really important. You know, if you move someplace, like, say, you know, you can look on Craigslist. You Columbus, Ohio, you can have a two-bedroom apartment for, like, $600. You know, you can work at Walmart and afford that. There's just tons of options. And, you know, you go, you get your skill set back up to a level. California will always be here. I have, you know, so many people that come to California with incredible skill sets, but realize after 4 or 5 years that they're just living paycheck to paycheck, and they take their skills, they move to Denver, they move to Austin, they move to Seattle. And, you know, Americans used to be so much more mobile, and so many times, you know, people are very reluctant, and I understand, you know, it's a wonderful place, but you know, get your ducks in line and then come back.
Well, thank you, Greg. I appreciate hearing from you and hearing your point of view. There's the old saw, you know, that those people who are maybe able to afford housing and everything, maybe one check paycheck away from being on the streets or being homeless. Right. And I'm going to read a comment from Mariana who says, I've learned to detect homelessness among my students at San Francisco State University. Signs and symptoms include sleepiness, lack of concentration, restlessness, irritability, skin rashes, and poor health in general, leading to poor grades and a high dropout rate. I am using Theater of the Oppressed in my classes and liberal studies to address this issue. And any other advice from your guests on how to support homeless students? Well, we did a whole segment on homelessness and college campuses. A lot of students actually not only homeless, but really literally hungry, you know, looking for a meal and so forth. But anything come to either of your heads on this that you want to share?
Well, first off, what I would say is that they would need support, especially as young kids in school and things like that, and growing up and going through the process of being a man and turning from a boy to a man and from a young girl to a woman. Mm-hmm. It's the support that really helps them. And without that support, they feel like, I would think that they would feel like they wouldn't have nobody, or they wouldn't have the drive that they would need to succeed. So I would just say support. You know what I mean? That's the best thing going.
You know, in fact, we have a link now to our full coverage of the San Francisco Homeless Project on our website. I just want to mention that because it does mention services and things like that. Simply go to kqed.org forum. But with seconds left here, what else can people do? What else, talk about policy just for a second here, would you find would be particularly helpful and would make your life a lot easier?
Just trying to get some organizations that help, like getting the move-in fee like done for them, and like just rent control. That's the biggest thing that I could stress, because the higher our minimum wage goes, the higher our rent is. It's right. Just like, I don't have a problem with like San Francisco people moving to Oakland or people from Haiti, like just all moving to Oakland, but like I'm not going to be forced out of my home where I've been all my life because a lot of people want to move here. Like,
Oakland's pretty expensive now, too.
It's pretty expensive because we're in high demand. Our apartments are in high demand, but I just rent control.
We're out of time. I thank you both. Thank you, Dominic. Thank you, Nishone.
Appreciate it for having me.
And thanks also to Kenyatta, who was with us briefly, and Rochelle. And good luck to you. Good fortune, I hope, will literally be yours. And keep that hope alive. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.